Hey, hello, and welcome to the Feel Strong Fitness Podcast. My name is Justin McClintock, and this week we have Jonathan Hoke on the podcast. John is a friend. He's a fellow coach. He's a really smart guy. This is a bit of a wide-ranging conversation. We talk about teaching and education and coaching, exploring different training modalities, including digging in on things we've tried ourselves, from bodybuilding to calisthenics to endurance training, some of the crossover and benefits we see of trying all of these different things, and some tips on transitioning to a new training modality, how to do it, how to add new movements, including warm-up, and the importance of seeking guidance from a coach. I really enjoyed this conversation. I think you will too. Jonathan Hoke is on the Feel Strong Podcast. Jonathan Hoke, welcome to the Feel Strong Podcast.
Hello, Justin. It's great to be here.
I'm very excited to have you here. We've been talking about this for a while, and we're finally able to put it together.
Yes, absolutely. I think, honestly, it's been like a year at least.
Oh, that we've, no. Oh, that's way too long. I think you're probably right, but I'm glad that you held me to it, and I'm glad we finally worked it out. Before we started recording, we were talking about some stuff that I think is super interesting, but about some plans you have and where you're going. Mm-hmm. However, I think we need to give people potentially a little bit more context before we dive right in the middle. So you are Hoke Health and Wellness. Mm-hmm. You are an independent coach. You also work with coaches. You do some speaking.
That's right.
What kind of work do you most love to do?
I would have to say teaching.
Tell me more.
Yeah. So all three of those, the common thread throughout with working with a coach on their coaching methods or working with a coach on how they speak to clients, working with a coach on their assessment process, from speaking at different events or for different organizations, and then working with clients, the common thread between all of those is teaching somebody something that they either didn't know before or didn't understand as well before. And it's something that I'm really passionate about and excited to continue learning about, because it's something I think that you never stop improving on.
That idea of really wanting to help people and being passionate about it, I find is often a common thread with coaches, but they don't always hone in on that aspect of teaching and education. Why do you think that resonates so deeply for you?
I think it resonates partly because of the fact that I always felt like I was in the bottom of the rung when it came to classes, and never felt like I was in the bottom of the rung when it came to my ability, and always confused me and frustrated me. I felt like not that I always felt like I got dealt a bad hand or anything like that extrinsic locus of control where, oh, woe is me and this is all terrible. It was just that I always felt like I didn't do a good enough job when I was younger figuring out how do I need to actually learn and understand this. And when I started coaching, really it was kind of the mix of I was getting my bachelor's and I was coaching at the same time. So full-time school, full-time work. And while I was going about that, I had to take organic chemistry. And when I got into that class, it was the class, you're already laughing because you know where this is going. Yep. Everyone was like seething about this class. Everyone was like, oh, be careful you don't get Dr. So-and-so. You got to get, you know, this person. Otherwise, you're not going to be able to pass the course. Of course, I get the person that everyone's like, you're not going to be able to pass it if you get that person. And then COVID hit. And I was like, oh, so not only do I have not get to do this in person, but now I'm going to go to the most distracting way to learn possible online, where we're all learning and doing that stuff. So it was in the amongst that time that I sort of realized, oh, I'm not dumb. And I know that that sounds a little bit harsh, but I realized that I could actually learn difficult things. I just was forced into a position where it was do or die. You will not graduate with exercise physiology if you do not figure out how to do this course. Went through it with an A-. So I was pretty excited to be in that position. Whoa. And figure out that was where I was at. And like I said, that was while I was coaching. And so while I was coaching, I realized I say, you know, get your knees back and sit your hips down, and they just don't get it. What's happening? And instead of getting frustrated, I just said, hey, close the refrigerator with your butt, like your hands are full, or any other numerous cues, and then started studying about internal and external cues and blah, blah, blah. So I think that's where it really spurs from, is I know what it's like. It's a level of empathy. I know what it's like to not get it when somebody says something. And I know what it's like to be on the receiving end of that, of somebody who doesn't want to try any harder. And you're like, well, I need you to, because I don't have anything left to give, or I need you to, because I can't, you know, make up that ground right now because of everything else that I have going on. So I think that's where it stems from.
That makes total sense. And I didn't know that. And I resonate really deeply with that. I wonder if you have this. how do I say this with any kind of humility? There's a bunch of people who think of me as a pretty smart guy, and I understand why. And I tell them whenever it comes up that I'm actually not smart. I just smash my head against things. I am very stubborn. Happy to smash my head over and over and over and over and over again until I understand and can do it. And if that means, oh, I need to stay up for 2 days straight reviewing index cards, that's the only way I'm going to pass this test. That actually doesn't mean anything, but it's the only way I'm going to be any good at it. I will do unreasonable things to get somewhere that lots of other people, I think, get relatively easily. And mm-hmm. that same experience, I think, has made me a better coach for drawing that parallel you just pulled out. Yes, maybe this cue or this idea works for 75% of the people, but then those 25% literally don't understand. And mm-hmm. it's not because they're dumb, and it's not because they don't work, and it's not because their brains are wired just slightly differently. And so saying knees back is never going to work. So then you have to start solving that problem. Okay, mm-hmm. how do I get in? How do I get into this particular puzzle box? Mm. Because the pathway in isn't the same pathway I've ever used before, but this is really important. And if I figure this out, I'm going to run into this person again, most likely. A year from now, I'm going to say knees back, and I'm going to get a blank look, or their knees won't go back. And I'll say, you know what? Let's try this. Close the car door, and boom. Or I need to, you know, put the back of my palm on their shin, and their eyes light up, and they figure it out. Mm-hmm. Does that experience of people thinking you're pretty smart, but you've actually just kind of learned to solve your own problems in interesting ways resonate with you?
Absolutely. People mispronounce stubborn all the time when speaking to me. They keep saying smart, 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 and they don't know how to pronounce stubborn. It is that stubbornness, right? Of just tenacity of like, I want to get this because of everything else that lies on the end. And you talking about the client piece is, of course, highly relevant. I have someone I'm working with right now, him and his wife, actually both remotely. And he has always felt from the beginning, he started to feel dumb because he was like, I just don't get what you're saying. And he would get agitated and get frustrated. And I continuously have encouraged him like, hey, even though this may take you longer than somebody else to get that you've seen before, now that you have it, it's going nowhere. And he like, some of the movements I don't even have to ask for videos on anymore, because I'm like, you're never going to do that incorrectly again. So that type of person, it's like once they get it, like you're talking about, it's not that they're dumb. They have different gifts. They have different giftings. Like he's hypercritical. He's extremely detail oriented, all these different things. And that comes with territory. I had you and I have sort of a common thread within music and theater and things like that. And I had a chorus teacher growing up that would say, creative people are always going to be a bit crazy. It just comes with the territory. And it really is just like that's a good representation of it, that you're going to have certain gifts, but understand if you have those gifts, it's probably going to come with some negative findings as well that you'll have to work yourself through. So definitely resonates. And I love working with people like that because it just makes you a better coach and a better person in general.
Well, and people like that often, you know, when you're creating brand new motor pathways for people, one of the bright spots is what you're not doing is breaking a bunch of bad habits. Mm-hmm. You know, I don't have the person whose high school coach taught them to squat this way and taught them to power clean this way. And the coach taught them what the coach was taught also. And it's the fifth generation, but it's really not great. And it's not moving this person in the direction they want to move. So now we have to undo 25 years of motor pathways and try and rebuild something else, mm-hmm. as opposed to the person you're describing, who is kind of tabula rasa. And is willing to do that work and say, oh, well, this is going to be great. This is going to be harder the first time because, you know, 25 year high school guy or the guy with 25 years from high school at that experience has, you know, he's done 7,000 power cleans. So he can do a version of it. You don't understand mm-hmm. how to get there. However, we can build it the right way first. and it will be stronger, more stable, easier. And exactly what you said, now you'll never do it wrong because you only know the right way to do it.
And not to force the topic, but this is exactly why I think using different modalities to train all the time is highly valuable to the coach and to the person in general.
I completely agree. This is something we were talking about pre-recording and we were texting about also. And that's, you and I have both explored personally a bunch of different ways of training for ourselves. Mm. And I shout this from the rooftops and tell coaches any chance I can that, you know, I know you love what you love. I know you have, you know, your niche or your modality. You should really explore other things, even things that you don't think you're going to resonate with, mm-hmm. because they all complement each other so well. And honestly, as coaches, I don't know if this is with you, but I don't get to talk about my training very often. Mm-hmm. Sometimes on like an Instagram story, but you know, my life is focused on other people's training and movement. Mm-hmm. So I think this might be interesting. So what are your thoughts? Expand on that, using other modalities for training.
Yeah. And just to be clear, I push against, so you're familiar with Jonathan Goodman? Mm-hmm. It's like, yep. Trainer to the Stars. Yep. So he likes to say two big things I disagree with. I'll only go with one because it has to do with what we're talking about. The biggest one being that as a coach, find your niche and stay with it. I agree with that on the practice side, yep. but I disagree with that in the sense of what we're talking about now, which is if you only coach people, so coaching and training modalities and coaching certain types of people, I think this goes hand in hand. But yes, so on the training modality side, if you only ever power lift, you're missing energy systems, you're missing ranges of motion, you're missing different loading implements, which means that you're missing certain strength, certain balance, certain recovery stuff. You're missing out on other things, basically just other things the human body is meant to do that might align better. This is the key part, I think, is might align better with how you want to live. I have a coach I'm speaking to right now about this and sort of mentoring on the side. Like, he is a client who screams from the rooftops that he wants a new deadlift PR. But when he's asked about his goals, he says, well, I want to keep up with my kids. I got a newsflash for you, dude. Your five-year-old is not deadlifting 450. So is it that you want to keep up with your kids, or is it that you want to deadlift PR? And I think that a lot of people need to be challenged with that. But yeah, I would just say that the modalities, that's one of the biggest ones, is that if you're doing just one, you're missing out on something. And I had a post about this that I feel like I just need to repost every week, but it was like me doing a couple of weird things. Like, I was doing single arm toes to bar and some cardio stuff and something else. And the joke was, oh, I forgot to call it CrossFit, so I didn't get the benefit from it that I could have. It's just, that's where we're at right now in the industry sometimes. So you just like, oh, but what kind of training is that? You know, like, what are you doing? It's like, I'm just exercising, and these movements are going to help me with this, and this movement's going to help me with that. And the interference effect, which just means that something messing up something else isn't happening that much because of XYZ. And it's just a good program.
Exactly. And that the niche idea, I think, to double back on what you were talking about that John Goodman was saying, I think you're exactly right. Like, it's what you just described is relatively hard to sell. I'm going to sell exercise. It's a whole bunch of different movements across a whole bunch of different disciplines involving a whole bunch of different implements. And it's going to be exactly the right thing for you. Now, that, by the way, is exactly what I sell. I say it differently, but it's that.
True.
But at any given moment, I mean, I had a client this morning who, you know, it, depending on when you caught up with us, you'd be like, oh, they're doing powerlifting. Like, oh, he's doing bodybuilding. It's like, mm-hmm. oh, he's doing gymnastics. Oh, he's doing like at what? And he doesn't know. He's relatively new to exercising. All of these things are correct for him. And I haven't used any of those words. I haven't said we're powerlifting or bodybuilding. Mm-hmm. I've been very, you know, super focused on the goals he's working toward. And all of these things, I strongly believe, are the appropriate things to move toward those goals. As a coach, I don't know if I would have had a bunch of these tools in my toolbox if I hadn't personally experienced them. Mm-hmm. You know, going through like a real gymnastics program for a while and seeing what it feels like. What's it like to progress? Oh, what's it like to like actually get that turnout on the rings and support? Oh, that's different. Oh, that's actually really different. Okay, this is a whole different, this opens a whole new world of modifying and progressing and things like that.
I'll tell you what,
understanding it in your body is, I think it's different. I think it matters.
I'll tell you what it's like going through a gymnastics program. your forearms need help, is mm-hmm. what it's like. I went and bought some Versa straps because I was like, oh, being 225 pounds, I can't do this every single day for 5 days a week. I need some help.
Yeah, it's really hard. And I, yes, I should do my wrist warm up no matter what I'm doing. Even mm-hmm. if the program doesn't look like it has wrist stuff in it, I need to work wrist tendon strength constantly because mm-hmm. when I ask something of it, I really ask something of it.
Yeah. And you touched on this earlier, but the idea in marketing, I guess, but more so we can pull it back to the individual, like features and benefits, you know, like the feature is that you're doing power, like you're doing this method, you know, you're doing this thing, but that benefit of what is powerlifting great for? And this is where I'm not on the realm of let's do everything all the time, no matter what, which you aren't either. But I want to make sure that it's very clear for people who don't know all of this stuff, like why this actually works and why this is, I truly believe, the king of training, especially for the individual who's not a specific athlete who's going through this. And even for the athlete who needs to address some weaknesses, which is that we're focused on the benefits, which in this case are the adaptations. What do we know? How do these adaptations happen? We have so much research on how these things happen. We know how to get those adaptations. So we're going to use all the things we know about and don't know about movement and what feels good for somebody and what they're inspired to do, and use all of that to say like, hey, if I can put together this program, right? How do we say it usually, Justin? It's like, if you have Michael Jordan's like basketball program, it's the, you know, it's the best program to build the best basketball player ever. But if you have someone who hates dribbling drills, then that's not the best program for them. Like, individualized, right? If they're not going to stick to it, then it's not the best program. It's not the most effective. And I think that gets people a lot sometimes. And they're like, but they think they're missing out on something. Mm-hmm. It's like, if you don't have enough energy to put forth the effort and whatever it is that's going to draw from you to get that thing done, then you need to do the thing that you're going to be able to do. And that's going to be the best thing for you. And that's even another power of, you know, mixing modalities and things. But we're just the key in there. We're focused on adaptation here. We are focused on the real results with real things. It's not just do whatever feels good, but it is a, hey, we know how to do all these things up to the elite level. And that's overwhelming at times, but if you know, take a ton of notes and make sure that you continue to practice it yourself. And like, we're willing to sacrifice our fitness in some ways to pursue those things. And sort of, you know, I always say, like, number one reason for me training is to be able-bodied. Number two reason is to experiment for clients means that I sometimes don't pursue the 500-pound squat goal that I'd like to pursue, that I'm pretty sure has been on my quote unquote goals list for years. Not because I can't get to it, but because I'm too busy. Like, I see these results for clients and I'm like, if I keep practicing this stuff and they get it and they're getting so much more out of this because of me practicing certain things, then I'm just going to keep doing that. And I still feel good. I'm still the able-bodied number one goal. So I'm going to keep doing number two until maybe at some point in my life, I do have a little bit more time to pursue the personal fun fitness things. But shoot, it's also really fun to do goofy stuff with calisthenics. So
And it would have to become, as with any of your clients, it would have to become a big enough priority, right? Mm-hmm. You have a decent understanding now of what it would take to get a 500-pound squat and to move, you know, once you pass a certain level, you know, adding another 1-2%, you're like, okay, well, that's going to be 16 weeks for another 1.5%, and it's going to be hard and it's going to hurt. I'm going to be sore and I have to eat a bunch of food and maybe, you know, trade off some other things that I'm attached to with aesthetics or energy, but I can get there. I can totally do it. Is that, you know, at what point is that risk reward cost benefit outweigh each other? Yeah. To take even a further step back and just underline something you said, that the training is all about the adaptation and the adaptation is all about the goal. Mm-hmm. That, right? That client you mentioned earlier who, I don't remember if it was yours or another client, but he is dead set on a deadlift PR. Mm-hmm. But his number one goal is to keep up with his kids. I suspect, I don't know, but I suspect he had a time in his life when he was deadlifting heavy and felt a certain way. And if we dig into it, like, so what is if you hit a deadlift PR, what would that mean? Like, well, I'd be big and strong and I'd feel capable and I could do anything. And I'd have tons of energy and I'd be sleeping really well. And my wife would love me. Okay. What if we could do all of that and not move your deadlift number, but do all of that other stuff? Would you be down? Well, yeah, that's the point. Cool. Let's chase that. Because first of all, that's more inspiring for me. And I think that's actually what you're after. And yes, heavy deadlifts may well be a part of it. But if the finish line benchmark is whatever, deadlift 500, and we get there and you don't feel better, feel strong, have energy, sleep really well, have great relationships, I'm not sure that's going to be a win. So if we chase the big thing and then reverse engineer, well, what adaptations do we need to give this person more energy and feel capable and be able to run across the beach and get down on the ground and do all of those things? And now it probably does involve some powerlifting, but it also probably involves some, you know, plyometrics and calisthenics and some weird rotation and all of these other ideas.
Mm-hmm. It involves doing the things that you probably don't want to do. Probably.
The not fun stuff, right? And yes. there is an element, I think in any good program, there's an element of eating your vegetables,
mm-hmm.
right? If a program, I'm always a little suspicious if I like everything in a program.
Yes.
If it's all like super fun and good and I'm really good at it and I feel awesome, like, this isn't hard enough, or or there's some holes I'm not seeing.
Yeah.
Or my current program is the opposite. Every once in a while I run into a movement. I had one the other day and I sent a note to my coach. I'm very concerned because this is my first time doing this movement. And it felt easy, and I think it looks really good. That must mean I've made a mistake.
Yeah.
Because none of your stuff is ever like this. But if I'm doing a program and everything feels great, looks great, is fun, is super enjoyable, I start getting a little suspicious because that probably means there's some holes that aren't being addressed.
Yeah.
There, I think any, especially an individualized program, there should probably be a combination of some stuff that's challenging and maybe not a lot of fun, maybe even uncomfortable.
Mm-hmm.
Things that are challenging and fun, things that aren't super challenging but are a little hard and a little uncomfortable, and things that aren't super challenging but are super fun.
Yeah. Yeah. What are, with that challenging piece, what are some of the things over the past 5 years, 10 years that you've done modality wise that surprised you, excited you, moments that you like became a jughead? What kind of things, like, did you go through for the past 10 years in modalities that like stuck out to you, or lessons learned for them, things like that?
The big ones in the past 10 years were probably learning how much I enjoyed like a true bodybuilding protocol and actually enjoyed like focusing on the quality of a muscle contraction during a single rep, like getting really deep into that idea of it's not just the range of motion. Yes, it's the range of motion. It's really not the weight. It is a combination of my RPE, and that is strongly measured against the quality of each and every muscle contraction. Like how honed in can I get on this mind muscle connection and make, you know, an incline hex press just absolutely brutal when I'm using 20-pound dumbbells, and being able to kind of like squeeze the as much juice as possible out of something like that. And combined with, I would say like range of motion and balance stuff in calisthenics, right? I was truly shocked when it was a couple months ago now, but I did a bridge rotation. So going from all fours, flipping over and landing in a full bridge with extended arms and straight legs. And the first week my coach gave that to me, I sent him a note like, hey, I'm happy to try this, but I think this is probably somewhere we're not going to get. Because I couldn't even get halfway over. I was just getting stuck and my shoulder couldn't externally rotate. I was like, you know, I've had some shoulder issues in the past. This doesn't hurt. But I think this might be a thing where my training and injury history is getting in the way of us being able to go somewhere. But I'm happy mm-hmm. to try it. And like 3 weeks later, I got there for the first time mm-hmm. and was utterly shocked. So I think those are the two things that were sort of like big surprises for me, were how much I enjoyed bodybuilding, where it was probably 15 or 20 years ago, but I used to make fun of it a lot as pointless, ridiculous, only vanity. Why would you do this? You're wasting your time, not functional. Fill in the blank. I said some stupid stuff about it. And as a, you know, 230-pound, 44-year-old guy, my ability to like pop into these weird positions that I thought were reserved for people way younger than me. And I thought was just something was lost to me. It's like, oh, I'm not, you know, I'm never going to get a front split. I'm never going to get a, you know, I'll never be able to do a standing backflip. There's a few things I kind of missed the boat on because I was busy doing other things. And suddenly I'm like, well, I don't know about a backflip, but like, we're actually working toward a front split and it's getting better. And I didn't think that was a real thing that could happen.
Mm. I was about to ask, are you working towards a backflip right now, Justin? Am I going to see like just a video pop out of Justin doing a backflip all
I would
of a sudden?
Truly love to. Honest to goodness, I've tried a few times over the years. I can't find anyone confident spotting me.
Mm.
And I get it.
I'll come see you.
I would have a hard time spotting
I'll
you too.
I'll come see you. I got you. If the only reason I come to visit you is to spot you in a backflip, then that's okay.
How about yourself? Surprises, revelations in training?
So I feel like the largest shift I had, because I started out with just like growing up with sports and doing pretty normal training. I remember distinctly one of my first memories in the gym was in middle school, sixth grade. I started playing football. And so I started doing like tricep pushdowns, just like hanging out with my brother, working out with a lot of old bodybuilders. That was the vibe. I was in a YMCA and just old bodybuilders in there.
Totally. I love
definitely
it.
Most of them on drugs. Yes. Great time. Great guys.
All the drugs.
Just all about, yeah, all about just destroying your body in every way possible. All of them dry scooping pre-workout before it was cool.
Yep.
And I remember doing triceps and looking in the mirror and going, I just wish I could see the thing, like the muscle that's doing the thing. That would be so cool. Like one day just to see that. And so I started with like that kind of bodybuilding background and then it shifted and kind of into, okay, build strength. That was like the classic football stuff. And then it was, okay, build power again, still with football stuff. And then it was, oh, there's power lifting. And then it was, oh, there's bodybuilding. And then there's, oh, there's this mix of the two. And then it was into Olympic lifting. And then it was into gymnastics, mainly because of getting involved in CrossFit. And then it was sort of that mix of doing CrossFit and those things. And then it turned into, oh, I really like handstands. So then it shifted to calisthenics, shifted into sort of calisthenics and speed training. And then that shifted into Ironman training, like heavy, heavy endurance training. So I'll start with like some of the big revelations with the big shifts. The big shift with the revelation of calisthenics was this is so not about the traditional volume and rep scheme that I so remember. Like when you talk about what we're actually doing with calisthenics, oftentimes it's 10 out of 10 effort or 9 out of 10 effort with some movements. And you do have to be somewhat careful with that, but that totally just blew my mind with trying to program that and understand the strain on my body and how I would recover in that. If I did that with a bench, I wouldn't dream of doing that the next day, like again, or the next day or the next day or the next day, like I'd wait and I'd recover. And not because I couldn't do it, I'd be scared to, but because I knew it wouldn't be as good. Like I just get a full exertion of that yesterday. It's not going to be as good today. But calisthenics is so not that. It's so like, you'd be better off doing a practice prep and skill like section in your lift for years before doing any like real strength stuff, depending on where you are. Of course, I was already strong and training background, so it's a little bit different. So that was a big revelation just in that piece of it and having fun with like the skill acquisition. I had not done anything in a, like probably 6 or 7 years that was skill acquisition rather than just, oh, you're not strong enough. You know, all the other lifting was you're not strong enough or you don't have the range of motion. This was like, you're just not good at it. And you just have to practice and practice and practice. Like handstand holds are like that largely. Then the next huge revelation that I can think of, I guess, is with the endurance training and realizing I had gotten up to, just to give you an idea, the distances for an Ironman, it's like 112 kilometer bike ride. Mm-hmm. It's a marathon to run. And the swim portion, I'm trying to remember on the swim portion, but the swim portion was something around like, I don't know. I know it takes like 2 hours sometimes for people, but I think the swim portion ends up being about 2.4 miles or something.
I think it's something around there. I can't remember the Ironman swim off the top of my head for some reason.
And so that is a really large volume. And I was the dummy who was like, No, I'm doing a half Ironman first. I'm not doing a sprint triathlon first, and I'm gonna do a full Ironman. I stopped. I had not done those yet, but I stopped because I had gotten to about 40 miles a week of running volume wise, and about only 100 miles a week of biking, and about probably 3 miles or so. I'm trying to do the math of meters in my head. I was swimming 1600 meters twice. Twice a week. And that was so much time. Like, it wasn't effort. It was a lot of that's low, slow, take your time. But it was just, I realized how much time it was taking me to do all that before I would do it. During, I was just, let's do this. Let's go. I'm in this. This is awesome. And it really had me pull back and think about, what am I training for? Honestly, it was the first time I actually had this revelation of, you know what? I don't want to mess up a good thing. I am training, like right now it's 5 times a week, sometimes an hour, but in that hour I'm training with my wife. And so I'm kind of slowing down some of my lifts to kind of work with her on stuff and have fun and just hang out. And that's way better than 20 hours, 15 hours a week of endurance training right now. The moment I can involve multiple kids and my wife in the training, like, I don't know, dragging someone behind me in a trailer on a bike, then maybe I'll start getting back into it. I do love pushing the human limits in general. So that was, I think, the biggest revelation from endurance training is just, wow, you talk about 10 hours of training a week or 15 or 20 hours of training a week, feeling just, I guess it was like 10 hours a week of that was mind boggling. It was crazy just to think about, but one, just the fact that the human body is capable of that. That was the other, I guess, side revelation of it that goes along with the time is not realizing you could work out 8 times a week and be fine. I think we harp on recovery a lot and it's like, you could get to a point where that's possible. That's probably not what you need or not what you want, depending on where you're at with things and what you're trying to do. Like you said, your goals. So those are the biggest revelations, I think. It was really crazy.
That's really cool. Yeah. The especially with the endurance stuff, to a degree, any real, because at that level, you're essentially training like a competitive athlete, right? Mm-hmm. To regardless of the degree that you're going to be competitive in your race, and I have no idea how competitive you may or may not have been, but you need to put the same time in no matter what, right? When, you know, football players or high-end CrossFitters are doing 2-a-days or 3-a-days, you know, they're doing 60 to 90 minute sessions 2 or 3 times a day, 5 to 6 mm-hmm. days a week. That kind of volume is often required just to get the stuff in. And when the stuff is, well, yeah, I'm going to be swimming 2.4 miles and biking 112 miles and running 26.2 miles. That is more than a full-time job. Yep. I mean, I've done a handful of marathons and that's a full-time job. And everything starts revolving around it, because even then when you're like, oh, well, it's 12 hours a week of training, but it's not. Because there's actually planning for it and getting the route and setting the time aside on each side and the food and the recovery. And so it's actually probably like 15 to 20 hours a week. 20 hours a week is a full-time job. And that's why it's also, like, as a side note, why a lot of the Ironman people are extremely well off, because it really helps if you have a bunch of money and don't have to go to work. There's some wealth class barriers on sports like that.
Yeah.
Just like polo, right? Yeah. If you have to like have a horse and have all of these things and time around, that's going to be really hard.
Yeah. I've got a bike that's a little bit too small for my frame. I've got goggles that fog up too much.
Yes.
And I've got chafing cream for my thighs that are too big to run in anything, but short shorts. Yes. So yeah, it's just, and I'll tell you, as far as competitiveness goes, I'm 220 pounds, so I wasn't passing anybody in that race. It was just going to be, I'm going to go as fast as I can and try not to die.
You're
going to
be a monster.
Yes, exactly. That's where I really get them back. All these uphill races, I was looking for the downhill ones and I couldn't find any.
The point about effort in calisthenics, I think, is interesting. And there's something I tell people about calisthenics and gymnastics, and I wonder if you think it's true. And that is, one of the reasons you can go so hard and it is so hard is that it's a very hard thing to quantify. It's really important to qualify your efforts, right? If I'm doing a ring support for 20 seconds, the 20 seconds, I might do a ring support for 20 seconds and, you know, have a couple sets of that every Monday for the next 20 weeks. and it will stay at 20 seconds, but there can be huge amounts of progress because I can go from a slightly soft elbow and hands turned in and I'm looking at my toes and hyper breathing. 20 weeks later, I'm locked out, palms forward, legs squeezed together, eyes on the horizon, cool, calm breathing. And I'm smiling at the French judge because I know he likes it. And on paper, I did the same thing. I did 3 sets by 20 seconds. But the quality of it has radically changed. And that's a big part of doing it well, doing it virtuously. And that's where you see a lot of the benefits, including the fun benefits of aesthetic and strength and capability.
Mm-hmm. I want to clarify, when you say the ring supports, are you talking about genuinely just holding the deep ring position?
I was thinking like a straight arm ring support. Like the
straight arm ring support. Okay, mm-hmm. Got it.
But also I absolutely have people hold bottom ring support all the time.
Yeah. I think there's a lot of truth to what you're saying. The nice part is that it really does still come down to the training principles that we already know and love. And I will say I've had myself progressing and had to be okay with progressing movement quality, like you're saying, a lot more than anything else. Like, you know what? I'm doing single arm pull-ups right now and I have a band, but what's really hard with that is that the band's kind of torquing me to the side. And so it's like a core exercise too. I'm like holding myself and trying to pull this way. And I didn't realize as I was progressing volume, I was like, I just try to keep everything the same. And so it does keep you very like accountable to that form aspect. So I have the band on and I grab onto the band and the ring. And in my head, I'm like, oh, I'm not really pulling on the band that much. But then, you know, my inner coach goes off and I'm like, try like getting go of the band and see what happens. Let go of the band. And I was doing sets of 12. Well, now I'm doing sets of 6. Yep. It's the same band, but I'm not pulling on the band. Now the band's just on my feet and that's a lot harder. And so I just had this sort of like thing happen yesterday where qualitatively I had to put in my notes on my app, you know, did 3 sets of 6, a lot harder now, green band still, but now I'm not holding onto the band. And realizing that now when I use that progression, I'm not going to change the band. Next time I change volume, I'm probably just going to either grab the band or do something like that. And so you definitely have to get more creative with how you're measuring the progress as a whole, as you're working through it, which is really helpful for body awareness. Yep. I feel like I've found myself really understanding the quality of reps for other things a lot better now that I'm kind of working on progressing like levers, right? Instead of just the weights or anything else. Like some of those things you can only progress your body weight. So figure out a way to finagle it and make it work.
And doing body weight with some of these movements is that's the peak. That's oh my goodness, you can do a front lever on the rings.
Yes.
You've been trying for at least 3 to 5 years. That's just the reality of it. Can we have a calisthenics coach nerd moment?
Oh, please.
One arm pull-ups. One of my favorite ways to have people go through them is using a band, but don't step in the band. It's mm-hmm. only holding onto it.
Mm-hmm.
So,
you're talking about bar and band, right? Like a dual pull-up.
So one arm on the bar, your working arm, as it were, on the bar. The other hand holds the band. Mm-hmm. And then it does matter how thick the band is, but it also matters how high up you hold it.
Yep.
So I even track like hand basically on the bar. You get a lot of torque. Mm-hmm. If you go 6 inches down that band, now it's going to move a lot. You're getting a lot less help.
Yeah.
But it's a way like anything else. We're changing the load, right? Putting more and more and more of that load on your working arm and not having your foot in the band, which does that weird torquing thing. Because with a one-arm pull-up, you kind of want to turn. I mean, almost everyone who's people who are really good at it end up doing a little bit of a torque and basically a chin up.
Yeah, it's at the end of it. Yep. Absolutely. No shot. If you're staying in that position, it's way too easy for you to do a one arm pull up.
Yeah. Or you're superhuman, which I'm sure someone's going to DM me a video of them just doing a one arm bar pull up and their body not moving out of the plane.
That's definitely not where I'm going in my calisthenics. I will never get to that point, mainly because I don't want to be that light and I don't know that I'll ever get that strong, but we'll see. But that move makes you feel really cool too, because it'll trick you into thinking you're closer to the one arm pull up than you are, but it's also just it's such a great variation. Holding onto the bar, having that band hanging off the bar, and just repping out 6-8 reps, depending on how many regular pull-ups you can do. And honestly, it's a fun way to mix it up if you can't do a regular pull-up. It's a little bit fancy. It takes a second to set up, but putting assisted band and then also doing single-sided ones to kind of mix in different volumes and movement implements and whatever else. So
and it's a variation of single arm strength. I think we don't test enough, especially if you're mm-hmm. not in a place with cable machines, mm-hmm. which is usually how the easiest way to do it.
Like, sure.
How often are you doing single arm vertical pulling and right. testing that actually one against the other and looking yeah. for deficits and imbalances?
My right side was way more sore than my left when I first started doing these, and I'm excited to see where it continues to change. The next, my favorite one right now is working on the planche, mm-hmm. and in that position, having a band assist me with actually holding it now. Because before I was just doing sort of like leaning forward as far as I could and then pushing back, and I was sort of plateauing with like, okay, now I've gotten good at this, but now I don't feel like I'm getting any further than where I am at now. And it just dawned on me like, well, just do the movement. It's like, well, I can't do the movement. Okay, find a way to do the movement. And that was sort of this rule that I found was super helpful of, I'm gonna throw the band on, and goodness, throwing it on your feet, because then lever of the assistance is helpful too.
Yep.
So planche is right, is when you're doing that plank position on the floor, palms out, and I put the band on my feet and I was like, whoa, I can hold this easy. I'm gonna put it on my waist.
Mm-hmm.
I put it on my waist. Nope, can't do that. All right, somewhere in the middle. So put it like mid shins or at my knees. And so now I'm working on that progression now. But the, of course, getting to that point where you can do that full body weight is stinking impressive, and it looks good.
A ton of work. I'm doing banded tuck planches tomorrow morning. So nice. With band around your waist in that beautiful, well, I'm going for beautiful, but straight arms, working on like a really aggressive lean. So my wrists are mm-hmm. under my hips, mm-hmm. that super hollow back position. So your abs are on fire and screaming at you, but mm-hmm. knees up to your chest, and making sure that band is hanging straight down. And that is like, if I get over 10 seconds, I'm pretty happy.
Yeah. The opposite of that is what I'm working on with the V-sit, literally just flipped around and trying to use, and I'm using a band on the bottoms of my knees to sort of pull me up into a extended position. And what's so fun about working on those things is you realize with the assisted ones combined with the non-assisted, you know, lower version ones that you try to do less range of motion, just as hard as you can, sort of max effort versus max range of motion, I guess. The fun part is figuring out, you keep blaming one thing and that's not actually the problem. I'm like, oh, just my core, you know, once my core gets strong enough, it'll be good. And my rear delts are back there like, hey, we don't know how to do this.
Yeah. So you actually don't use us for this ever until now. So I don't, we weren't realized we were going to be called in on this one, boss. Yeah,
exactly.
For changing training methodologies, because I imagine there's some people out there listening right now who are interested in the idea. I'd love to try some new stuff or mix things up, but they are faced with the sort of dual dilemma of, well, but I know how to do what I'm doing now. Maybe I like it. Maybe I'm in that place where I've been training, you know, CrossFit or Pilates or BJJ or whatever their powerlifting, their thing for a while. And they feel like they want to change, but they're good at that. They know how to do that. And they don't know what they would possibly change to. And we've rolled through talking about, you know, going, you know, spending a lot of time doing long, slow distance or doing powerlifting or doing bodybuilding or doing calisthenics or doing CrossFit, which it turns out both of us have done all of these things. How would you help guide someone who is in that place where like, I think I want to change, but I don't know what I want to do. I wouldn't even know where to go. I have my powerlifting gym, which is also my social center that I've been a part of for 5 years. What do I do?
Mm-hmm. I mean, it's kind of nice because it's the same that you would say to anybody who's not lifting at all, which is just start super small. And some practical ways, like add something, you know, simple to your warm-up. Like I started, there was this guy actually that I first started calisthenics originally because I saw this guy who, I cannot remember his name on Instagram right now. We'll talk about it later. But like he was basically just doing on his hand stuff. And he was like walking around like a monkey. He had these challenges. He was doing Brazilian jiu-jitsu and basically just started doing like, hey, I started doing, you know, 5 minutes on my hands every day. And I did 10 minutes on my hands every day. And he's up to doing an hour on his hands every day. And he's been posting his, like, I'll send you his page, his progress and everything. He'd be like, hose up his forearms and everything. And he does these little challenges where he's like, I'm going to spend 10 minutes on a bar, hanging from it any way I can, whether it's hanging with my grip at first, and then I'll put my legs up there and then I'll hug it like a monkey. I'll do it. And it's a really fun and interesting way to just kind of mix things up. And he's having fun training his kid how to do it, et cetera. Dude can hold handstand for 10 minutes straight, easy. Whoa. Because of how long he's just been doing hands. But anyways, so one of the things that I was mentioning that for is because he just said, hey, do 30 seconds on your hands, do this type of stuff. And what I noticed with that was, oh, I could do like a, so you were talking about, I'm trying to think of how to name this movement, but it's kind of just like a tuck, like hands on the floor and just kind of tucking your knees to your chest. Mm-hmm. And it's sort of like a tucked planche, but really I started with just being on all fours and going up onto my hands for a moment and then bringing my legs back down. So it was just kind of this sort of like, almost like a, not a leap, but just sort of rocking onto my hands support. And then, mm-hmm. yeah, rocking onto my hands for support and then letting my feet come off the ground for a split second and putting them back down. And that was really hard, both for my shoulders, even though I could overhead press 200 pounds, it was still hard for my shoulders because it's a weird motion and things are different and I'm tensing up everything else too. And so starting with a little movement like that where, hey, just try to do the, what's the like tri-stand where people put their hands and their head on the floor and they just try to balance their like knees. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Little tripod, just do something to your warm up and then move on to your regular lift. Don't change a thing and just see if you like it. And if you're like, ooh, I kind of like this, I'm getting good at it, then switch out another thing. So I think adding something to your warm up, switch out one movement or so. If you really want to get technical, like try to change out a movement pattern. Like if you're doing, you know, a lot of overhead pressing and you want to try to work on your handstand, well, pick a hybrid movement, you know, try just some, do you ever do overhead holds with a dumbbell or a barbell? Just try that out at first. And then once you start doing that for a bit, like try getting vertical, you know, try seeing how your wrists feel just doing a downward dog. Basically don't be afraid, I guess, that's your warm up. Choose hybrid movements. And the third one, don't be afraid to do something really, really seemingly simple. Yep. Give it a shot, progress it for a while, let it be a part of your warm up or a movement you sub out and see where it takes you. See if you enjoy it. It's a way for you to test the waters a little bit. Like, hey, I don't really want this full meal. Can you give me a sample? Yep. Can you give me the appetizer? Let me taste it a little bit and see how it feels and see what it looks like. And be okay to ask for help too, I guess would be the last one. Sort of shamelessly plug ourselves, like working with a coach on something like that, to where you know you're not going to screw up everything else or mess up your progress and still get to try something new and fun and different while staying on the same course you wanted to be on.
I think that's great advice, starting small and adding those things in. And I would add two things. One, don't be afraid to look a little bit silly because, spoiler, your first back squat looked pretty silly. You just don't remember it anymore or yep. you didn't feel about it that way. But mm-hmm. someone was in the room and was like, oh, God, I will probably be able to teach him how to squat, but I don't know. I don't know. This might be hard.
Maybe 10 years in the making.
Right. Like as we covered earlier, you're creating new you know, movement patterns. The first one's not good.
Yeah.
Even if it's pretty okay and surprisingly good, it's not good.
Yeah.
So it's not going to look great. Get over that right now and try something out. And that's how you start learning how it feels with your body, how to adjust things like that. With your note about working with a coach, obviously I couldn't recommend that enough, but it is, I definitely had this, especially like post lots of powerlifting and Olympic weightlifting, the other ways of training, even not just even calisthenics, but other modalities of training opened the door to all of these things I didn't know I could work on in PR.
Mm.
You know, what I covered earlier, and I was certainly in this place where I was like, okay, to PR my squat, it's going to be another 16 weeks of work for 1-2%.
Right.
All right, head down. I was like, oh, wait a minute. I can PR my chin over the bar hang with legs together, squeezed, and eyes perfectly on the horizon. And I can do that. I can just do that a couple times a week. And I've, you know, my elbows and shoulders are pretty good, so I can just keep work. I didn't even know there's all this stuff I can work on.
Mm-hmm.
I can PR my tuck banded planche. I can PR my foot weighted hollow hold versus my hand weighted hollow hold. And it's not just the novelty of it, but it's really a whole nother world of things to work on that I found really interesting and frankly motivating. Like mm-hmm. it introduced the fun and the excitement and me looking forward to working out again, which I had lost a little bit in some of those other modalities.
Yeah, absolutely. That's one. That's a huge one for me with the most recent progression to one arm pull-ups. I was like, oh, I think it'd be cool to be able to get 30 pull-ups in a row. I think that's just a number that is kind of crazy large for most people, like 20 is up there too, for sure. But I haven't heard of someone, I've heard of people claiming like, oh yeah, I can do 20, but I've never heard of someone just in person publicly proclaiming like, yeah, you can do 30 pull-ups in a row. It's just a lot. But in working towards that, I was just like, I'm so sick of pull-ups. Like I'm done with this. And then I was like, oh, but I haven't messed with high volume and I haven't messed with really heavy weight in a while. So let me push into those. And so moving into the single arm is just a great way to mix that up. I got really sick of training the handstand hold for a while. And I was like, okay, how can I mix this up? Working in some single arm ones or working in some rocking or working in, or taking a little bit of a break and having 4 weeks, 5 weeks, 6 weeks of, it's just going to be a part of my warm up for right now. Mm-hmm. And I'm going to take a break from this thing. So yeah, it's definitely, it's opened up a new horizons for me too. Of, I used to only be thinking about more weight, more weight, more weight. And now I'm thinking like, you know, my most recent development is speed work. Coming down the pipeline soon or coming to a theater near you, but just like that speed work now is sort of something that's along with the calisthenics. It's okay. Now it's sort of in this theme of, you know, hyper body movement, like how much can the human body do and how much is my body capable of, and how can I safely progress these things at the same time while taking into consideration time limitations and whatever else. So in that essence, now I'm thinking about how can I progress my comfort level within full speed athletics or cutting, or how I feel with running certain routes, if it's for football or dribbling the ball a certain way in soccer, whatever it ends up being, or my vertical, all of these things now that I have no idea what my all time vertical best is. I have no idea what all these other numbers could be or what they are. And it does give a lot more motivation and excitement because there's a lot of growth to be had, but also things that are going to more importantly make you feel good moving around. Like I've been visiting my brother a little bit more and playing with mostly his 8-year-old, but the 5-year-old joins in sometimes too, doing like baseball and kickball and soccer and stuff. And you don't have to fully sprint while hanging out with a kid, but shoot, he thinks it's hilarious and has a lot better of a time when I'm diving around and jumping and having a good time with it. So yeah, it is super motivating and you find new levels of function, I think, in some ways that you didn't think about otherwise or really feel otherwise before you start doing something new.
Yeah, I completely agree. I mean, ideally, in the macro, I think ideally all of our training and exercise supports that, supports a full, functional, capable life where you don't have to ever hesitate or worry about saying yes to the things you want to do.
Yep.
And you may well find some function surprises. This is sort of the second time of me like really focusing on calisthenics and gymnastics in my training career. And both times I'm like, my shoulders have never felt better. Mm-hmm. And I use them more than almost anything else. Like every day I'm doing stuff that would be, you know, shoulder intensive.
Yeah.
But in, you know, explosive but controlled, long isometrics, but really particular movement patterns, really pushing the range of motion. And like Olympic lifting beats the hell out of my shoulders. Mm-hmm. And CrossFit is, yeah, it depends on, you know, the volume and stuff, but it can be hard on my shoulders. Man, I feel great and healthy and can really push intensity in a satisfying way on a very, very regular basis.
Yeah. The idea of something that I teach my clients verbally, that's what you're describing as far as something that makes you better outside of the gym, inside the gym, is preparation versus expression. And to find the preparation being what you do inside of the gym and what you're trying to get better at, et cetera. And the expression being the why of what you're doing the preparation for, what are you expressing with? And I think it's really nice for most people, if not all people, in order to live like being active their whole lives and being healthy, to have some level of expression. And it's okay if that level of expression is inside the gym sometimes. And I think it's also nice to branch out a little bit and have some stuff outside the gym, even if it's calisthenics, but at a playground and outside of the gym, that's fine too. But this idea of preparation versus expression and to have those molded into something that fits what you're inspired to do so that you do stick to it and you do actually enjoy it and you want to have fun and work hard at the same time.
Yeah, I completely agree. I think you have to have wins outside of the gym in order for what you're doing inside of the gym to continue being motivating and inspiring and seem worth it in any kind of long-term scale.
Yeah, 100%. And on the side of feeling good with the shoulders, I was a former pitcher and my shoulder was just screwed up like crazy from years of doing that and doing skin the cats,
yep,
doing handstand holds, doing, you know, reverse bridges, whatever it is, or just doing a bridge. Those feel great now. And now I also feel like snatching feels good and overhead clean and jerk feels good. Don't do them as often right now, but if I wanted to, I probably could get into it again and see where it's at. But, and to note too, like, of course we always know this, but sometimes genetics plays a big role and your past experience plays a big role. But the exciting part being that sometimes it's just trying something different that lets you get to a new level of function that you didn't think was otherwise possible for your body, thinking that you were broken when in reality it was just not a great modality for you. Like you're talking about for snatching, like if snatching beats up your shoulders, sure, you could get really intricate. Let's look at your shoulder girdle. Let's check out your scapula moves. Let's look at all these things and assess them. Or is that going to really weigh you down and be frustrating and exhausting and you're having a great time with calisthenics right now? Cool. Let's keep going with that. Individualization at its finest.
Yeah, exactly. And again, like as we've covered two or three times now, it all comes back to the goal, right? Mm-hmm. Is if your number one goal is, well, I want to be a competitive Olympic weightlifter, then yeah, we have to spend a bunch of time figuring out how to make you snatch. Yep. If your goal is, well, I want to feel strong and capable and fun and look great and hang out with my friends, I bet there's a few different ways we can do that that may or may not involve snatching being a part of it. Yep. So make sure that we're actually working in the direction of the thing that we want before we dive too down a nerd coach rabbit hole. Absolutely. Not that either one of us would ever dive down a nerd coach rabbit hole endlessly.
I would never do that. No, and I don't think I've ever done that, actually, now that you mention it.
Impossible. I feel like we could do this for another hour, and I suspect we will again in the future. But
yes.
Tell the people what they should know and how to find you.
Yes. What they should know is that I work with individuals in person in Tallahassee, Florida. I work with people remotely on finding physical freedom. And arguably more importantly, I have a career that is in the realm of teaching. I look to get my PhD at Florida State. I'm in that master's program right now. I'm looking to educate people via my platforms on Instagram at Hoke Health and on YouTube as well, also at Hoke Health. And those platforms are meant to educate. They're meant to be platforms to have discussions. They're not meant to be platforms to make sales, although sometimes that happens. And so I also do an email thread that I send out education and updates on the company and updates on education and the fitness industry as a whole and the science stuff too. I'm a big believer in the sense that there's advocates for this industry that sort of speak to different populations and things. And so the goal is to garner as many people as possible on solid wavelengths that talk about truth rather than just opinions on certain things. And so that's kind of what they need to know is that education's out there. It's free. And I'd love for you to be a part of it.
And we will put all of that in the show notes, certainly the places they can go. So if you're listening to this on a device, you can probably click on the show and click on a little link right there and go right to Jonathan's socials or website.
Perfect.
John, it's been an absolute pleasure. Thank you so much for coming on the Feel Strong podcast.
Thanks for having me, Justin. Always a pleasure.
Thank you so much for listening to the Feel Strong Fitness podcast. Please subscribe and leave a 5-star rating if you have the time. That makes a really big difference. If you have questions, you want details, DM us on Instagram at feelstrongfit. There's more information on the website at feelstrong.me. We value effectiveness, individualization, and empathy. See what it's like to have an expert in the field really listen, hear what you need, and build you the perfect program to get you where you want to go. Today is the perfect time to get started. Reach out.